This is The Guardian.
Today, as new government COVID restrictions come into effect, more allegations surface about lockdown breaking parties in Downing Street last Christmas. It was the moment that Number 10's Christmas story fell apart. An explosive video, never meant for broadcast, leaked to ITV News and released on Tuesday night.
One more.
Well, what we're seeing is Allegra Stratton, who at the time was Boris Johnson's press secretary, who was standing at the lectern, basically fielding mock questions.
I've just seen reports on Twitter that there was a Downing Street Christmas party on Friday night. Do you recognise those reports?
I went home. hold on.
And Allegra laughs and jokes. And what it clearly is, it's a practice run for her to field what are difficult questions.
Would the Prime Minister condone having a Christmas?
What's the answer?
Is it had this feel of these kind of insiders who knew what the rules were and they knew that they'd broken them.
Is cheese and wine all right?
No.
It was a business meeting.
I'm joking.
This is recorded.
The rules they'd decreed for other people didn't apply to them.
And it was not socially distanced.
By now, the video has been viewed millions of times, and on primetime TV, it quickly became a national joke.
Evening, Prime Minister! For now.
He was forced to acknowledge the damage of the video bombshell.
I understand and share the anger up and down the country at seeing Number 10 staff seeming to make light of lockdown measures.
And Allegra Stratton was forced to resign.
My remarks seemed to make light of the rules. Rules that people were doing everything to obey. That was never my intention.
All in all, it's been an exhausting week for Boris Johnson. Yesterday, as he and his wife announced the birth of a baby daughter, his party was fined £18,000 for the failure to properly report donations that financed their Downing Street flat redecoration. And after bringing forward new COVID restrictions, he's faced fury from MPs on his backbenches.
Why should people at home, listening to the Prime Minister and the Secretary of State, do things that people working in Number 10 Downing Street are not prepared to do?
Suddenly, he's running out of allies. From The Guardian, I'm Nosheen Iqbal. Today in Focus, Christmas parties and Plan B. Is Boris Johnson losing the trust of the public and his own MPs? Peter Walker, you're a political correspondent for The Guardian, and you've been following this story since it broke. As we sit here, it seems to me there are new details emerging on an almost hourly basis. But can you take us back to the start? How did this news of a Downing Street party first emerge?
The news first emerged on November the 30th when Pippa Creer, who's a political editor of the Daily Mirror, a former Guardian colleague of mine, published this quite jaw-dropping story saying that there'd actually been a couple of parties in Downing Street during the lockdown of winter last year. But the one that the most focus has been on was one on December the 18th. And basically from there, things kind of started to escalate because all the details were there and no one was really able to say, no, it didn't take place.
So what kind of party are we talking about here?
It wasn't just that someone nipped down to Tesco Metro, got a cheese platter, you know, and a couple of cheap bottles of white wine. There was this element of planning. There was a secret Santa. There were games. There were quite a few people packed into a room. And the people there must have known that what they were doing was against the rules.
I mean, one source who attended this on the 18th of December said there had been several dozen people in attendance with food, drink, even party games on offer, and it went on till past midnight.
There's been a lot of stuff about people saying, you know, were there lots of journalists there and stuff like that, and there's separate allegations about parties in Boris Johnson's flat with supposedly some journalists being there, but it does very much seem to be that this particular party, the focus on December the 18th, was just people who worked there and mainly those in amongst the kind of press and PR end of things.
And was Boris Johnson there?
He wasn't alleged to have been there. The original Daily Mirror story also had allegations about a leaving party late in November 2020 for a Number 10 staffer who left. And it's believed that Boris Johnson was at that event. He didn't kind of stay for the whole thing, but he turned up, made a leaving speech, supposedly remarked during the leaving speech how packed the room looked, and then went off to a work. But at the December the 18th, no one's ever said that he was there as well.
So when the story first broke, how did the Prime Minister and his cabinet respond to what was on the face of it a very clear breach of lockdown rules?
So we had this quite extraordinary week where there was denial after denial of basically saying no rules were broken and also the party didn't take place. It began on November 30th, which was the day the Mirror story came out, when a number 10 spokesman said COVID rules have been followed at all times. And basically that was it. There was also a separate thing saying that reports about the parties in Johnson's flat were definitely not true. At Prime Minister's questions the next day, Keir Starmer asked him about it.
Does the Prime Minister really expect the country to believe that while people were banned from seeing their loved ones at Christmas last year, it was fine for him and his friends to throw a boozy party in Downing?
Boris Johnson just said that the guidance was followed at all times.
Mr. Speaker, I've said what I've said about number 10 and the events of 12 months ago.
And on subsequent days, it was the same.
Was there a Christmas party or wasn't there?
Poor Maggie Throop, the vaccines minister, who was on Question Time on the Thursday of that week, stuck to that line.
That all guidance was carefully followed as it continued.
Does that answer your question?
No.
So on the Friday, we had Oliver Dowden, the Conservative Party chair, who was again saying that all rules were followed. And for good measure, he said he wasn't at the party.
Actually, I think what your... I don't want to speak for your viewers, but I'd be interested to know what your viewers are really concerned about.
What they're really concerned about.
We went into the weekend and we had Dominic Raab, the Justice Secretary, who was on the Sunday politics shows.
Look, if anyone held a party contrary to the rules, of course that's the wrong thing to do. But Andrew, as a lawyer and as a politician, it's not a responsible thing to start answering hypothetical questions about anonymous sources in relation to unsubstantiated claims.
And then into the next week, on the Monday, perhaps a bit spooked, Boris Johnson's spokesman at the regular Downing Street briefing changed his line and basically said there was not a party. And this was the first time that there was been this outright, you know, no, that there was never even a party.
So that line held up until that now infamous video emerges of the Prime Minister's spokeswoman, Allegra Stratton, giggling at the lectern about social distancing and cheese and wine and how a party didn't happen. What happens next?
Well, what happens next is that this is basically the biggest, certainly personal, political crisis of Boris Johnson's prime ministerial tenure.
I apologise unreservedly for the offence that it has caused up and down the country, and I apologise for the impression that it gives. But I repeat, Mr. Speaker, that I have been repeatedly assured since these allegations emerged that there was no party.
I mean, I don't think Keir Starmer or the Labour Party will have, in a weird way, looked forward to a Prime Minister's questions quite as much as any in the past, because it was a completely open goal.
Spent the week telling the British public there was no party. All guidance was followed completely. Millions of people now think the Prime Minister was taking them for fools. Hear, hear. And that they were lied to. Hear. They're right, aren't they?
And there was a sense of Prime Minister's questions of, it was a very, very strong sense of Johnson potentially throwing some underlings under a bus. He was basically saying that if there was, you know, any evidence of wrongdoing, then there would be disciplinary action taken against people.
But I have asked the Cabinet Secretary to establish all the facts and to report back as soon as possible.
So after announcing this investigation, it's now expanded to look at other alleged gatherings that took place in Downing Street. And by now, there have been several more claims that there were other parties held on other dates as well. And the current count, I think, is 7, with one being reported as so rowdy in the basement of Conservative headquarters that a door was smashed. And some of them were allegedly attended by the Prime Minister. How has he responded to all of these allegations?
He's basically refused to talk about them. One of the most potentially damaging aspects of it, which is also the most difficult to prove because the guest list is so incredibly closed, is this idea that during the lockdown, Boris and Carrie Johnson would regularly entertain people at their Downing Street flat, which would have been completely against the rules. And, you know, that if there was ever any proof of that, that would be extraordinarily damaging for Johnson because it's very, very personal. But, you know, short of someone who's a close friend of theirs producing, you know, video or pictures, then it's very, very difficult to actually show that.
By this stage, a story that has been running for over a week without seemingly doing much damage has suddenly gone nuclear. How much anger has there been inside and outside Parliament?
There's been a huge amount, probably even greater than there was with the Dominic Cummings lockdown breaking rules, even though the feeling is a quite similar thing.
It started with Dominic Cummings visiting the castle because he wanted to check his eyesight. All of this is just absolute rubbish, Nick. Honestly, the British public are sick of this now. He can't come back from this.
Polls showing that a majority of voters now think that Boris Johnson should step down. One said that even 33% of 2019 Conservative voters think he should.
We have to be able to carry the public with us. And we can't do that if the public feels they're not being told the truth.
What's more damaging for Johnson potentially in the long run is the fact that Conservative MPs are starting to turn against him.
So this is not just about a party at Downing Street last Christmas. This is about the credibility of the government this Christmas.
Perhaps the most toxic part of this for Johnson is the contrast between what's very, very becoming very, very obvious him and his aides did in December last year and what the rest of the country was going through.
My dad was ill for 3 weeks and then he died, you know. It's I'll never get him back. Meanwhile, people in Downing Street are celebrating. It's really disgusting, to be honest.
That kind of contrast is very, very, very tough because COVID had touched so many people. Virtually everybody in the country, even if they don't know someone directly who's died or become seriously ill from COVID, will know someone who knows someone. And it was this kind of national mourning. And the contrast of that against this sense of a political elite or certainly a government class, which is not really treating it seriously in any way, is incredibly damaging.
And at the time all this was happening, these lockdown laws weren't even theoretical, were they? At this time last year, they were actually being enforced.
Yes, they were. There were police responding to reports of parties. There were some people who were fined £10,000, which is the maximum you could be fined. There are still to this day court cases going through the courts of people who are being charged in connection with events that took place in December last year.
If they will stick to this line that no rules were broken, has anyone in government or anyone else tried to explain how that could even be?
No, because there's been this kind of strange pretense that nothing took place. And if anything did take place, you know, they always say, oh, well, I've been told it's very much everything took place was within the rules. But no one has attempted to explain how, if any social event, you know, did occur, it was within the rules, basically because you can't, you know, there's no way of doing it. There have been, you know, legal commentators who've raised theoretical prospects about Crown land being potentially exempt from COVID rules. But, you know, A, I wouldn't like to argue that in court. And B, if you did try and argue it, I wouldn't want to think what the public opinion would be like.
So as he said, there are cases going through the courts right now that relate to people ignoring lockdown rules from last December. So will the police investigate whether Downing Street parties broke the law?
The Metropolitan Police have said that they're not. And it's a slightly strange one in the sense that a lot of cases have been prosecuted, or certainly a certain number have been prosecuted. But my sense of it is, for the most part, the cases which are prosecuted are ones where the police were there on the night. And you have body cam footage of 50 people in a room. And that's very, very easy to prosecute. And I suppose the police could, you know, find a list of people who are in the room and interrogate them and find it out. And I think a lot of people would want them to do that. And there might be a public interest argument for it. But it would take up a lot of police time. It would be quite an exhaustive thing for something which, in the grand scheme of crimes, would be considered a relatively minor public order offence. So I can kind of see it from both points of view. But, you know, there is this sense, you know, why isn't the Metropolitan Police doing anything?
Peter, it's been clear that while all this uproar about the Downing Street party has dominated the news, the threat of COVID infections have been rising again.
It's now the proportionate and the responsible thing to move to Plan B in England while continuing.
And on Wednesday, we saw the Prime Minister back on that podium again, where he announced several new restrictions.
First, we will reintroduce the guidance to work from home. Second, from this Friday, we will further extend the legal requirement to wear a face mask to most public indoor venues, including theatres and cinemas. We'll also make the NHS COVID pass mandatory for entry into nightclubs and venues where large crowds gather. And having taken clinical advice since the emergence of Omicron, a negative lateral flow test will also be sufficient.
The obvious question now is, can government really expect that people will follow these rules to the letter if they seem so unwilling or unable to do it themselves? I mean, does Boris Johnson have an answer to that?
Again, his only answer is not really to answer the questions. At the Downing Street press conference, he was asked that a few times, and all he said was, you know, we would urge the public to follow the rules. This is really important.
I think the British public, notwithstanding the point that you make, can see the vital importance of the medical information that we're giving.
From that point of view, he's perfectly right. But there clearly are two issues, one of which is the big one, which is this idea of people thinking, well, why should I do it? Why should I go through this yet another personal sacrifice for a national effort if the people at the top aren't doing their bit? But the second one is the rules are still a bit more confused and mixed up. So you do have this strange thing where people are advised not to go into the office, but Christmas parties and things like that are still officially seen as something you can do. And if you do say, no, don't have Christmas parties, then that would spark a wave of newspaper headlines, potentially front pages saying, you know, Christmas cancelled. And that's quite tricky for the government.
Some people might now think that this is a bit of a media story and that it's all gone a bit Punch and Judy. But actually, there are very serious public health aspects to this, aren't there? That if people don't follow these restrictions, our infection rate will rise.
The evidence of the Omicron variant is it does not seem to be more dangerous on an individual case basis in terms of the health impacts it brings onto people, even though we don't necessarily know yet. But it seems to be so much more transmissible that the statistics follow that if you get X tens of thousands more cases, then you're going to get a certain percentage of them who are going to be seriously ill. And even by Christmas, the NHS could be in a quite bad way. The only way you can stop this NHS crisis taking place is to reduce the number of infections. That basically means people mixing less. And it's nothing like last Christmas in the sense that people are able to go to pubs. They're even able to go to nightclubs, even if in a week's time they're going to have to show proof of a negative test or a vaccination. But if the social contact continues more or less as it was before, then the number of COVID cases will go up. And if Omicron is as transmissible as the scientists fear, then you get this exponential growth. And once that starts to take place, then it becomes a really, really medically difficult situation.
Coming up, as the Tories head into next week's by-election, how much damage has been done to Boris Johnson's premiership? Peter, we spoke earlier about public anger in this episode, and there is now a test coming up for the Prime Minister next week. The Tories are defending their seat in the North Shropshire by-election, which itself was caused by the resignation of yet another scandal-hit Tory, Owen Paterson. And I guess the big question is, when we keep hearing about these stories cutting through to the public, is this time, is this one actually cutting through? Could we see a shock Lib Dem win in that election result?
It's a seat which, in its various incarnations, has been conservative for all but two of about the last 200 years. It was briefly liberal between 1904 and 1906. It's quite Brexity, it's quite rural. I went there last week, and even before this fuss about the party completely blew up, the Liberal Democrats are quite hopeful that they might be able to take the seat. I mean, they accept it's an incredibly difficult ask, but following their candidate round on the doorstep, there was already this general disaffection with the Conservatives. Weirdly, it was less to do with Owen Paterson and Sleaze and more to do with the sense that the seat had been taken for granted. It was such a safe Conservative seat.
You could put a blue rosette on a straw bale and it would be elected in North Shropshire.
Yeah.
And I'm going to vote for you this time round.
A lot of people would say to the Lib Dems, oh my goodness, I've not had anyone, you know, from a political party knock on my door ever. And there was this sense of some people wanting to give the government a kicking.
And you were saying you were a former Conservative voter, were you?
Yeah, I've traditionally been a Conservative voter.
The local Lib Dems have already produced a flyer they're sending around to everyone, which shows a picture of a kind of weeping elderly woman saying, you know, Christmas 2020, and then a picture of a gleeful-looking Boris Johnson, and trying to get that image in the minds of people.
Well, I think it's disgusting when everybody else is up to, you know, can't even see the families.
It just goes with the general attitude, I think, of the government to, you know, not take it seriously.
They shouldn't have done it if they did do it, and it does bring the government into disrepute.
It's a difficult one to call because Labour also think they're in the fight. Labour HQ are not treating it completely seriously. They've not sent a lot of ministers there, but the local candidate is extremely keen. But even if the Lib Dems run it close, then a lot of Conservative MPs will be really worried because this is the sort of seat the Conservatives should be holding in their sleep.
And adding to the list of the Prime Minister's problems, yesterday the Conservative Party was fined £17,800 for serious donation reporting failures over the funding of the Prime Minister's Downing Street flat redecoration. And you've got to wonder how this is eroding faith in Boris Johnson's judgment. And one thing I'm also left wondering, and I'm sure a lot of people are, is just how this video of Allegra Stratton ever came to light in the first place, which is a year after the event itself. And it does seem like Johnson is building up some serious enemies within his own operation. And now he's ordered a whole new investigation into his own staff members. What will this do to trust within Number 10?
It's a difficult one to say, because particularly if you're a political appointee rather than a civil servant within Downing Street, then you're very much part of this kind of inner team and your heart's in it. Becoming a special advisor is a job where you know the job security isn't that great. If your minister loses your job, then you also lose your job. And so these people are really, really very, very close. They have the same political views. They work together a lot. And particularly in a time of crisis like COVID, it's very much this sense of we're this under siege team who has to do an awful lot. The kind of culture of loyalty within that is extremely strong. But at the same time, you know, if Johnson is ordering an investigation and promising that people will be sacked for something that everybody assumes he also knew about, then it would be interesting to see how long that loyalty will last. There were also civil servants seemingly there too. And, you know, if you're a civil servant in Number 10, you will very much also feel as if you're part of the team, but you haven't got that same ideological link. And we have had leaks from civil servants in the past, and relations between the Johnson government and the civil service hasn't always been great. It's basically going to be a massive test. They're taking quite a risk. You could argue that holding an investigation was the only option left to Johnson, but there was this sense of him sacrificing underlings to save his own skin. And the consequences of that remain to be seen, but they could be quite tricky.
And it's not just inside Downing Street that Boris Johnson has to worry. On Tuesday, his new COVID restrictions that we've been talking about will go before the House of Commons. We know how resistant some of his backbenchers have been to these laws in the past. Could he be facing a serious rebellion?
He potentially is. I mean, they will almost certainly get through because Labour and some of the opposition parties support Plan B. But it's quite damaging for a Prime Minister to have their own MPs voting against them again and again. It remains to be seen how many will actually vote against him. There have been reports it could be 30, it could be as many as 60. One of the tricky things for Boris Johnson that he's had in recent weeks before all this fuss about both the new COVID rules and the parties came up was this slight culture of some MPs just not bothering to vote. And I've talked to a few MPs about why they're doing that. And it's because there was this whole sense of the government was U-turning all the time. So over Owen Paterson and over the whole sleaze stuff, they initially tried to save Paterson's job and then changed their mind the next day. So some Conservatives are thinking, well, you know, why should I bother if it's all going to change, if it's not going to last? And almost the kind of fear of the whips and this power of patronage that Johnson's got is kind of dissipating a bit because Conservative MPs might not see him as being there for the long run. Once the Prime Minister reaches that, then they're in quite big trouble.
But as we know, he's very good at brushing off and squashing scandal after scandal. But could this spell the end of Boris Johnson's premiership?
People have predicted Johnson's demise many, many times, and he's clung on and risen. You know, he's been sacked from a ministerial post way back in the day for lying, and everyone said, oh, that's the end of it. People said he could never become Prime Minister because his personal life is too messy. And he's defied a lot of political rules. You know, again, it comes back to the contrast between the public mood and what Conservative MPs think. And the two are obviously kind of linked in that Conservative MPs will be getting emails from locals and things like that. What will be very damaging for Johnson will be if Tories think that he's lurching from crisis to crisis so much that when the next election comes, he can never possibly win. The Conservatives are quite ruthless in getting rid of prime ministers who don't look like they're going to win. If he's perceived as such damaged goods, if he's seen as a laughingstock, if, you know, ITV primetime programmes are mocking him night after night, this is not a good place. So, you know, it's this kind of cliche which was wheeled out many, many times over corruption, this sense that these build-up of scandals never matter until they suddenly do. And we've not yet reached that point where they suddenly do to a terminal extent with Johnson. But, you know, if you had to predict, the end certainly looks sooner than it did maybe a month ago.
Peter, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
That was Peter Walker. You can follow Peter's reporting from Westminster and more from the politics team at theguardian.com. Before we go, I should mention our Christmas charity appeal. Each year we reach out to you, our readers and listeners, and ask you to help us make a difference to people who really need it. This year is no exception. You can help people who have had their lives, homes and whole communities devastated by the climate crisis by donating to our annual charity appeal at theguardian.com/charity2021. Or you can speak to your favourite Guardian journalist, me included, during our annual charity appeal telethon. Phone 0203 353 4368 on the 18th of December between 10 and 4pm. That's it for today. The producers are Eva Krisiak and Rose Della Rabiti. Sound design is by Rudy Zagadlo. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Maithili Rao. We're back on Monday.
This is The Guardian.